CJSF is looking for new volunteers to come in and make radio. No experience is necessary. You can learn to DJ, edit sound, produce news, make posters, and host your own show. Come out to a weekly station orientation to get involved. Orientation times can be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
The great 4th century Taoist philosopher Chuang Tzu has said, "Birth is not a beginning. Death is not an end. There is existence without limit. There is continuity without a starting point." Science is now beginning to include the legitimate arena of scientific research into the study of consciousness, inviting us to look more deeply into just what it is, and is there such a thing as the survival of consciousness after death? Is there a greater reality that exists beyond the reach of our narrow physical senses and our current scientific instruments? Are the gatekeepers of our academic and scientific institutions having to look more closely at the prevailing assumptions about life and death? Our guest today, Dan Drayson, poses the question, could a fresh review of what we call death transform our view of life for the better? Dan Drayson is an award-winning documentary filmmaker and has been a photographer and media producer for more than six decades, including operations manager of New Dimensions. He's the announcer whose voice you hear on each program. His short 1961 documentary film entitled Sunday was widely acknowledged as the first social protest film of the 1960s and as part of the permanent film collection at New York's Museum of Modern Art. Since the early 1990s, Drayson has been actively investigating the field of afterlife communication through traditional mental and physical mediumship, as well as modern electronics, as featured on his documentary film, Calling Earth. Dan Drayson is the author of A New Science of the Afterlife, Space, Time, and the Consciousness Code. Join us for the next hour as we explore the objectively demonstrated scientific findings of the continuity of human consciousness beyond the physical body with our guest, Dan Drayson. I'm speaking with Dan from his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Justine. It's a pleasure to be on the other side of the microphone for once.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Here you are on the other side. And I'm just so delighted that you have given us a little thumbnail of the research that you've done on afterlife and all the people that you've talked to and all the findings you found. And so first of all, I want to ask you, how did you even get interested in this research? What got you started?
Well, some of it goes back actually to my early childhood, when I had experienced a number of precognitive dreams, dreams that in one sense or another came true within the succeeding several days, perhaps. And this kept happening to me. I didn't understand it. I soon found out I shouldn't talk about it. The important lesson in it was that it taught me that, you might say, in the theater of life, stuff goes on backstage.
Ooh, nicely said.
Yeah, that there are these realms beyond the obvious aspects of reality that, of course, our physical senses can perceive. Now, we know that science, since the Renaissance, has been aware that there's plenty that goes on behind the scenes, not obvious, as I say, to our physical senses. But coming into the modern era, we find that science has sort of become ossified in becoming equated with materialism.
Exactly. And Dan, please tell us just what is that, scientific materialism? What is that?
It's basically a confusion between, well, let's put it this way. Science itself, science in its essence, is simply a method of inquiry. I call it organized curiosity. And it shouldn't be confused with materialism, which is an assumption about reality. We tend to believe, or much of contemporary science believes, that matter is the only reality. Now, that itself is deceptive and short-sighted, because we know that what we call our physical reality consists not just of matter. It's matter, energy, space, and time. And when you look at it that way, we see that the very term materialism reflects a bias toward the matter to the exclusion of the energy, space, and time. And when we start thinking in terms of energy, space, and time, our conception of reality, I think, gets freed up to some extent.
Well, what about, Dan, what about the idea that scientists say, okay, that consciousness is created in the brain? Mm-hmm. That's like an example, I think, of what you're talking about. Is that true?
It's perhaps partly true, in the sense that obviously our brains condition our consciousness. You know, an afflicted brain will produce distorted consciousness and so on. That doesn't mean that the brain is the source of consciousness. What's becoming increasingly clear is that the brain is more of a tuning device, kind of like a radio, a two-way radio. And the concept of two-way radio, or the concept of any radio, would have been completely unthinkable, 150 years ago. That what we call radio waves or wireless communication would have been considered the sheerest fantasy, would have been considered science fiction. But we know since Marconi in the 19th century that electromagnetic waves are entirely real. We can't see them around us, but as you and I sit here, thousands of radio and television broadcasts are passing through our environment and even our bodies as we speak. So this should give us a clue that limiting our notions of consciousness to, say, its physical vehicle, our brains, is a very limited way of looking at this reality. And more scientists are being confronted with evidence that it can't possibly be true that the brain is the cause or source of consciousness. In some of my presentations with my film, where I've done Q&A sessions, and people ask me about life and death and so on, and I say, death is nothing to worry about. We're already dead. And then, you know, you see the jaws drop. But what I mean by that is that when you look into consciousness, which appears to originate beyond the physical sphere, you can experience life as consciousness looking through our eyes and through the sensory organs of our body. And this in no way diminishes the reality of physical life, but it puts us, puts our being, as it were, closer to what we call the source. And perhaps closer to each other's consciousness.
And when you say the source, help us to understand what your concept of the source is.
Well, one of the holy grails of science and physics in particular is finding, you know, the ultimate cause of things. And what they tend to do is look at smaller and smaller and smaller particles, as if particles were the source of reality. And I think that's a little bit like assuming that if you put enough bricks together, if enough bricks put their heads together, they could design a beautiful and structurally sophisticated building. And that's what philosophers call upward causation, where the smaller is presumed to be the cause of the larger, and the simpler is presumed to be the cause of the more sophisticated. Now, that there's some value in that sort of analysis, but I don't think it can get very far, certainly not much further than it is now, without taking a look beyond the physical.
You say in your book that I just loved, and I wrote it down, you said, over the entire course of history, no particles of consciousness have ever shown up. So that when you're talking about the parts, but how do you find the parts of consciousness?
Right. Well, you can classify certain aspects of consciousness, but consciousness is clearly not constructed of particles. The whole idea of particles presupposes a bias toward the idea of materialism. And
exactly.
Obviously, at this point in the progress of this research, we need to start looking beyond that. And it's not difficult, because when you start asking the right questions, you find that the most appealing and effective answers come from this point of view that is beyond the material.
Well, I know that there's something that I think I read in your book or maybe your film, but it was the entire physical universe may itself be embedded in a more comprehensive matrix of a greater reality. And that's where that image of those films, The Matrix, really kind of helps us to sort of at least have an imagination that goes beyond just what we can touch and see and hear.
Absolutely. The idea that's presented there, I think very in a wonderfully dramatic way, is that frameworks of reality are relative. There may be multiple frameworks of reality. And so you and I and everyone we know believe that we live in a common reality system. And I think that's true to a great extent. However, what you and I make of reality may be very different.
We have different habits of mind, don't we?
Right. And these may be determined culturally, linguistically. And that's in my book. I place a great deal of emphasis on language. In that, you know, language comes out of our culture, and it tends to reinforce the presuppositions of our culture.
Exactly. I'm going to interrupt you for a moment, Dan, because I really want to get into that in depth, because I know that that's an important point that you're bringing up. But I want to remind our listeners, I'm here with Dan Drayson. He's the author of A New Science of the Afterlife, Space, Time, and the Consciousness Code. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, dandrayson.com, and he spells his last name Drasin, dandrayson.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm here with Dan Drayson, and he's the author of A New Science of the Afterlife, Space, Time, and the Consciousness Code. And we're talking about consciousness and language in particular. This is such a great subject, and I know that you really talk about it in your book, and it's often used as a kind of filter, it puts a parameter or a frame around how we see our world. So talk about the importance of language.
Well, chapter 5 in my book is called Don't Eat the Menu.
I love that title. I loved it. I said, it gives us such a visual of what you're talking about. Please go on and share with us what that means.
Right. Well, the idea is that language only points to things, and it shouldn't be confused with the things themselves. If you speak more than one language, I think you'll understand that there are some things that are literally untranslatable. Experiences one may have may suit themselves to be described in one particular language, and they just don't fit another. I recently had a housemate, for example, who was from Iran, speaks only Farsi and English. And I'm a language freak, and I love to, in my own amateurish way, read various European languages and try to translate them into English. And there's so many commonalities that it's not that difficult to do. But when it comes to a language that is from a completely different language system, it's a very different and difficult process. You have to kind of get into the mindset of that particular culture, see reality as it sees things and how it breaks reality down, and then work from that other perspective. So, but even French is my second language, for example. Even learning French has put me into a different mindset about certain things, because culturally, it regards certain things in different ways than we in the English-speaking world do. So that's where I'm coming from generally. And more specifically, with regard to what we call the afterlife, we're kind of stuck with a hodgepodge of religious and scientific and repurposed terms to try to grasp this thing. And it's become a kind of a mess. And I'm hoping in some of what I point out in my book to unravel some of that. A very simple example might be, we say somebody, nobody, everybody. We say that every day. But doesn't every time we repeat that, doesn't it reinforce the notion that we are nothing but our bodies?
Oh, right. Yeah, then that starts to limit the frame right there, because it kind of embeds it in us. We believe what we say, or, you know, in some ways, you know, words have meaning, truly,
right,
is what you're saying, I think.
Absolutely. So I've had this chapter is actually the longest chapter in the book, is about language and how it affects our perceptions. And again, it tends to reflect back to us our own cultural norms and presuppositions. And I don't know if there's any way to avoid that, but I think being conscious of it is most helpful.
And then I was thinking also, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just traveling, just getting out of the borders of our own culture. I always think that people who live in let's say, Europe, maybe have a better facility than us in the United States. Our borders are so large, but we're a single language, so to speak. There are different dialects or different accents, but still we're speaking the same language. Where you travel in Europe, people in Europe, they speak four or five languages. I mean, they just are traveling back and forth. I'm always struck by that and how that changes their consciousness as different from those of us who live in the U.S.
I agree. And even if you're not philosophically inclined, subconsciously, when you are multilingual, I believe your mind processes information in a different way. Again, getting back to the question of an afterlife and terms like materialism, there is what is now emerging in some branches of science, the notion of post-materialism.
I like that term. This is a good one.
Right. It's useful. It's not too restrictive. It's simply saying that materialism is all well and good within what it can describe.
It doesn't deny materialism.
It doesn't deny anything that science has discovered with its materialist focus. Just saying it's not enough. Not enough to describe reality as a whole. So coming back to language for a moment, post-materialist thinking invites us to take a fresh look at language, how it influences what we take to be reality, and what possibility it forbids or permits us to consider. So once we have loosened up our minds a bit, whether around the question of language or in whatever way, I think we're better equipped to at least begin to ask the right questions about reality and about consciousness, which is, of course, the next frontier science. Science is advancing on many, many fronts. And by the way, I think one of the most wonderful aspects of materialist science has been astronomy. And not so much because of the particular discoveries it's making, but by the speed at which it has to change its mind and open its mind about the questions that it's obviously concerned with, the birth of the universe. How did this all come into being? But even just its more sophisticated instruments, like the various space telescopes, have not just provided new information, but I think it's also helped open our minds and also illustrate that science is a process. It's not a dead end.
Right.
It's not a religion.
Ian, I wanted to ask you then, science is a process, and about asking new questions, which I think are just, these are really important ideas, I think, for our everyday life, actually. There are what we would call skeptics, those people who are genuinely skeptical. And then you call it something about pseudo-skepticism. So this has to do with asking new questions. So describe the difference between a genuine skeptic and a pseudo-skeptic.
Well, thank you. This has been another favorite subject of mine. There's a wonderful website called skepticalaboutskeptics.org. It was originally founded by Rupert Sheldrake years ago. And basically it takes a fresh look at skepticism. It includes an essay I wrote some years ago called Zen and the Art of Debunkery, which it's a long essay. It's almost a book in itself. And with tongue in cheek, it takes a look at some of the excesses and paradoxes of what's come to be known as skepticism. You know, if you ever watch TV or switch on your computer, sooner or later you will see so-called skeptics trotted out to tell us the truth about all these weird things like afterlife research and so on. But this genuine skepticism is simply, it's part of the structure of organized curiosity. It's, let's take a second look at things. Let's not accept things on face value. Let's really look into them deeply. But what pseudo-skepticism does is it takes the position that science has already had the last word. It has a fixed position about things. We have achieved absolute knowledge about X, Y, or Z, and that's how it is. And so anything that seems to go beyond that is automatically assumed to be illusory or false, or a matter of a mistaken identity, one thing or another like that. So it's this attitude, I think, has held things back tremendously in this whole area of new science.
Well, that reminds me, you say being curious. So here we are being curious, let's say, and you've mentioned several times, and your book really is highlighting the idea of consciousness going on. There is an afterlife. There's something that's occurring. And there's a lot of research on that. So I would like to know, like, okay, how do we include the afterlife, and what name, like, some piece of research that has, talking about being skeptical, that is starting to erase the idea of being skeptical that consciousness does go on. So what comes to your mind right now as something that really impressed you, that said, oh, got your attention, and say, wow, this one I want to look into more deeply?
Well, thanks. First of all, let me express some of my own skepticism about the term afterlife, which may be misleading. It kind of smacks of, our physical life is the real reality. And the afterlife is sort of like the tail pinned on the donkey, you know, this little afterthought.
Right.
So I think the very term afterlife can be misleading.
Even some people, like some religious organizations, would tout the fact that this life doesn't mean much and everything is going to happen wonderfully in another life.
Yeah. Right. So. Well, I think that there actually may be a little bit of truth in that, in the sense that if we look at the greater reality as being a wraparound, being wrapped around our physical life, before, after, and in whatever other dimensions exist, we can see our physical life as perhaps a subset of a much greater construct in consciousness. And that doesn't minimize its importance. And obviously, physical life gives us certain parameters and certain disciplines, time, space, the nature of our bodies, and so on, that focuses us on certain challenges, certain kinds of knowledge, certain kinds of experience that we can only get in this more focused or constrained framework. That's not the whole picture. Very clearly,
that's not the whole picture, is it?
Right.
I'm here with Dan Drayson. We're talking about consciousness and curiosity and life beyond the physical. He's the author of A New Science of the Afterlife, Space, Time, and the Consciousness Code. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe program.